Hi, my name is Molly Elizabeth. I believe in the power of imagination, that creativity can lift us out of the darkest places, and that we all are resilient as fuck. I'm here to let you know that you're darling and loved, and that coming home to yourself is the most revolutionary thing that you could ever do. This is the Darling Revolution Podcast. Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of the Darling Revolution podcast. I'm so pumped that you're here again with us today. Today, I'm excited to welcome Devin Walls onto our show. She is a fine artist and a muralist based in Southern California, and her work depicts an otherworldly place where energy, form, and emotion collide. Known for her use of bright colors and etheric feeling, her work has been influenced by surrealism, ontology, psychedelia, the natural world, and her coastal upbringing. She also, in addition to her studio practice, mentors developing creatives via one-on-one work and online courses. And her work has been licensed by companies big and small and is held by collectors around the globe. And she has a really fantastic podcast of her own called Art and Magic that you guys should definitely check out. Welcome to the show, Devin.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, thanks for plugging the podcast. I actually need to add that to my bio. So just reminding me.
Yeah, absolutely. Bios are always this weird work in progress, right?
Yes, they are.
I'm so excited to have you. Thank you for coming on. And I have so many questions, but usually I let this kind of be a pretty organic conversation. So we'll let it go as it goes. But I really wanted to find out from you. I always like to ask my guests who are artists a little bit about how their practice developed from being, you know, just kind of an organic thing that you just did in the privacy of your own home to being the thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I loved reading that you had, was it that you majored in philosophy?
I did, yeah.
Oh my gosh. I would love to know more about that and your journey as an artist in general. Like, how, what's the story of how you developed to becoming like an artist with a capital A?
Yeah, great question. Well, I guess the philosophy answer is a little bit shorter. I think in school I kept trying to like find the thing that I loved the most, but I had a really hard time connecting with anything. Like, I started as pre-med because I thought it would be fun to prove that I was really smart. And then psychology felt a little bit closer. And I don't know, I think I just ended up on philosophy because I was like, well, I like a mental challenge and I am this like thoughtful person. Out of everything that I'm aware of at this moment, that feels the closest. But I was just discovering art as I transferred to Berkeley to study that. And I wasn't quite ready to make the leap to switch over to art. So that was kind of how that landed. I like to just think of that as like a little marker of how I was really trying to find my truth, but I just hadn't fully gotten there yet.
It's so interesting how like the esoteric nature of philosophy has really translated into your work too.
Yeah. I think art is what I was actually looking for, but I just, you know, where I was coming from, that was such a stretch. But yeah, in terms of how I started doing art with a capital A, I'd been making art for a while, just like in a therapeutic context. I started making art actually while I was in school, just as a way to cope. I'd always dealt with depression in some form or another. And, you know, making art just gave me that self-soothing outlet. Mm-hmm. But then I graduated college with no plan other than to travel for a while. I pretty much saved up all through college so that I could go on this like year-long trip through Asia. And I think I was kind of hoping that I would, you know, find my thing in doing that. But instead, what I met was just even more needing to heal and needing to self-soothe. It was not the like magical find your passion trip that I think I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And so when I came back, I was really faced with, okay, seriously, what am I going to do? And because that was such a trying time as well, I just turned to art again, just as a way to cope. I think that was that post-college, post-traveling really needing to deal in the real world with some of my heaviest depression, and also when I leaned on art the heaviest. And so that period of time just led me to taking it more and more seriously. And I always tried to find jobs that would allow me to work as little as possible, or that just didn't feel like working. Mm-hmm. I did everything from like front desk jobs to, I think my last attempt was being a virtual assistant so that I could just do my own thing.
I tried that too.
Oh yeah. But I mean, but in one sense that was kind of good because I really got the knack of running an online business. And I think those skills really translated later.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I had one client, I guess the big like moment, because there kind of was one for me. I had my last client and she was my only client and she was really unreliable. And I, again, tried to just like escape reality and go live in Bali while I was working as a freelance assistant. And she kind of went out of business out of nowhere. And I was kind of just left with like no options, no idea of what to do next, no desire to do anything else. And I think it was at that point that I was like, you know, I already just kind of hate everything. And I know that nothing else is really going to work for me. So I'm kind of at rock bottom here. I might as well just follow the art thing and just see what happens. And I really didn't know what that would mean at the time, but I just did it because I didn't know what else to do. And it worked out.
That's amazing. And I love that. It's so interesting that of all of the women that I've talked to so far, everyone has that like moment. Some sort of almost quote unquote come to Jesus moment where it's like, I need this. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you almost get sick of your own kind of running in circles.
Yeah.
I love that so much. So what, did you start with painting or was it a different medium? Like, how did you start with all of that?
Yeah. Well, when I was in college, it was like colored pencils, very basic, like drawing, doodles, things like that. A little bit of watercolor. I didn't start acrylic painting until I got back from my travels and I was living in Berkeley again. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point when I was like in my really serious depression that I felt inspired to just paint much bigger and really shift what I was making. Like I felt like I just needed more and bigger expression. And that was the only thing that I could even identify as a desire within myself at that time. And so, that's when I switched to acrylic and I was working in like a really intuitive, emotive, expressionist style for a long time. And I think that was part of like the soothing and the therapy. And it's also where I developed an even stronger relationship with color, which has always been really foundational to my work. But then as I started taking things more seriously and I moved out of leaning on art just as therapy, I mean, it still is, but it also started to become a little bit more than that for me. Mm-hmm. That's when I really started to craft and hone what was really important for me to say and like put out as an artist and what mattered most for my direction to be. And that's how I kind of moved out of that like emotive expressionist state into what I do now.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit more about that transition. Like, I would love to know more of like, I guess the juicy details of that process of going from that emotive abstract expressionist state that it seems like a lot of artists start with because it is such a therapeutic process into developing more of what is now a pretty robust like vocabulary of your own style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was slow. It was a slow and gradual transition. I think it started just by following my interests. So that was one thing. And then I had such, you know, as so many artists do, I started to really get this strong desire. Like I really wanted something that was my own. I really wanted a voice, you know, something that was distinct and, you know, not just for like selling and for my brand, but for myself. Like I really wanted to visually see what my essence was. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was this drive to discover that. And I think once I started to hone in on that direction and that desire, I started asking myself like, well, who am I, and what do I care about, and what am I drawn to, and what matters to me? And I mean, I repeatedly ask myself those questions mm-hmm. to this day, I think, because those answers are always evolving, and we're always landing on new parts of the journey that want to come through. But for me, those answers started being things like, yeah, I'm fascinated with, I don't know, what might be considered like an energetic realm mm-hmm. and spirituality and the natural world too plays a role in that. Where I'm at with it now is really like exploring what I see to be this otherworldly place that maybe lives inside of all of us, or maybe I'm just imagining, maybe I'm tapping into it. I don't really know. But now that's really where I focus. And that is quite different than just like channeling your emotions. There's parts in there that are a little bit more distinct and separated than just channeling feelings. And so I think that's why it looks a little bit more now like a language, kind of like mm-hmm. you said.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting. The more that I always talk about how as artists, like the inner work is actually more important even than the skills we build, you know, with painting. Mm-hmm. Like, and mm-hmm. it seems like you've really done that, like delved deeply into like excavating your inner world. And then the more gems you bring up, it's like, oh, and that too. And let me also put that on mm-hmm. canvas. And I really love it. I'd love to talk more about, tell me more about your collection that you just released recently, the Sweet Collection, right? I love that there's this kind of place and microscopic quality to it. And I'd love to know more about the inspiration behind that.
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. So most of my collections, I don't usually start with an idea. I kind of just see what wants to come through in the studio, and then I piece it together intuitively and visually, and maybe towards the end of that, you know, cycle or phase in my process, I'll start to put together a theme and kind of step back and say like, okay, what do all these pieces have in common, and what was really coming through in this time, and what's been going on in my life, and try and piece it together that mm-hmm. way. For me, the one thing that was distinct with the Sweet Collection is I did really, like in a very practical sense, start bringing through my love of sweets and desserts. Like it kind of started with wanting to paint sprinkles and use colors and textures that were like a little more delicious looking, like you could eat mm-hmm. it. Mainly just because that was bringing me joy. It was just like a desire to move that way. And along that process, I did start to want to do patterns. So my work usually looks kind of like a scene or like a piece of a scene, you know, like a couple large compositions and or a couple large shapes that make up a composition mm-hmm. versus like a pattern. So the pattern type, it's not really a pattern, but it kind of looks like that, was new to me. And all I knew was that it just felt really satisfying mm-hmm. to do that. And I did have this moment where I was looking at one of my more standard pieces and I was like, okay, so if this piece is a world in and of itself, just like our world here, what if I were to like zoom in on a cell or a strand of DNA, like in this world of sprinkles and shapes and energy and like dreaminess, like what are the building blocks to that world? And it just kind of became like an interesting question to mm-hmm. me. So I think that question combined with this interest in like smaller shapes that take up the whole composition resulted in this idea around like the DNA of the worlds I create. And that was really fun, even just to understand my shapes and language from that perspective, just to like do this little shift and ask myself a new question and see what would happen. So yeah, there's a handful of pieces in that series that I call the DNA pieces. And those are kind of like the small shapey patterny ones.
And I love that. I feel like the best art asks more questions than it answers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I love that series and how you've zoomed in. And it's really inspiring because if you're asking those questions, it you know, as you said, it leads to other ones. And you're like, oh, I wonder if I zoomed in on this, and I wonder if I zoomed out. And it just gives you, it's like giving yourself a set of rules that actually frees you to go deeper into inspiration and creativity, as opposed to like, this is a blank canvas and I can do whatever I want. That actually feels more limiting in a lot of ways, it seems like.
Totally. Yeah. And I think asking questions, you know, that's a really good point. A lot of people, that I like teach or mentor have questions around consistency in style and how to create a series. And I think just what you highlighted, like asking a new question is a really good way to get pieces that answer it in a similar or slightly different way, but they will all be on theme of that question. And it can be a really fun way to like understand your own work even further.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's actually a perfect pivot, because I was going to ask you how, as you transitioned into being this artist with a capital A and you started, you know, creating your own vocabulary, what brought you to the place where you're like, okay, I'm making my work, I'm doing this thing. Now I would really like to help other people discover their own voices and make their own work. What was like the story with that?
Well, to be totally transparent, and this might be kind of weird to admit, the teaching and the art with a capital A actually followed like a similar timeline. And I think that's because before I owned the art with a capital A, I always also was very drawn to teaching and sharing. You know, when I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do, teaching or like guiding or being a therapist in some way was always on the table, but it never felt totally right. And so when I went all in with my art business, the teaching was a big part of that. In fact, it was a focal part for a long time. I actually just started out teaching what I knew, which was art as therapy. Mm-hmm. Not like an art therapist technically, but just my courses had this sense of, here's how you can explore your feelings and how you might just use art in a way that's like feels good for your soul, you know, mm-hmm. with no other intention other than that. And so I really started there. And, you know, just like the art has developed, the kind of courses and what I mentor on has developed as well and grown with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't think that that's weird to admit at all. I think it's good for other artists to kind of, you know, see the curtain pulled back a little bit and know, because I've gotten that question a lot as well. And I'm the same. I got my master's in literacy and I was a teacher before I let myself be an artist with a capital A. So it's been similar for me, where they've been very on the same wavelength. So I appreciate that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you've gone through, what have been the, I guess, biggest lessons you've learned as, I guess this is a two-part question. So what are the biggest lessons you've learned as an artist? So with your creative practice, but also as a business person, because it's such a complicated thing to have all of things together. You're wearing so many hats. So I'd love to know how that's been going for you.
Okay. I'll answer the business part first, because it's so tied to the art part. I might have a separate thing to say about the art part. I think being in business as an artist is incredibly unique. Like, you're not just selling like watches or I mean, maybe you are if they're handmade, usually you're not just selling like some sort of product or some sort of service. It's so tied together. And I think the biggest lesson for me is I started looking at the business aspect, like the emails and the launches and when I'm going to edit photos and pricing and like all that stuff, as almost like a day job. Like, this is the day job that I do that allows me to make art. And it's the best possible day job I could ask for, because one helps the other. Like, every time I do something good for my business, it helps my art grow and get out there. I can do it on my own schedule. Like, there's all these benefits, but nevertheless, I need to look at this as almost like a day job. And something about that, like depersonalizing it a little bit and separating it out from the art, it's just so necessary. I mean, yeah, it's just like that has to be done.
Absolutely. I always like joke about how my art paintings started out being my babies, and now they are not my babies. They're just they're just paintings. And if it is one that comes out that's, you know, feels like my baby, it's probably not one that I'm gonna sell.
Yeah, totally.
But those are few and far between. So I love how you see it as a day job, because you do, you need that separation, and you need to be a good boss to yourself and like have that discipline where you're gonna, you know, be gentle with yourself, but also be like, but there's also these things that I need to get done, you know, in order for other things to happen.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like, just the truth of the matter is if you want to be an artist or a human at all, you just need money. It's like just a fact. And so, and truthfully, like even farther than that, the more money you have as an artist, the more ability you're going to have to create. Like supplies cost money, space costs money, time costs money. And so like really seeing that, like the success in my business is success in my art. It's going to help my art get where I want it to go. Has just helped me honor that a little bit. And then also kind of on that note, I feel compelled to mention really keeping the studio practice separate. I think it's really easy when you share your art and you put your art up for sale to start letting the business stuff or the sales stuff creep into your studio practice. Like, oh, well, that pink kind of sold, and I don't know, people like this and this and this. There's an aspect of that. I think there's a scale, and you kind of just have to tune into where you are. Yeah, a scale, where you land on that scale. And I think a lot of that has to do with like the fine art versus commercial, you know, like if your intention is to work with brands, if your intention is to fit into this certain category, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I think the best thing you can do is identify how much external input is good and how much your intention is to just follow your own creative heart and soul. I think for a lot of people, there's like a middle meeting place that works really well. For me personally, I'm very protective of the fact that my intention is really to honor my creative truth. And if something doesn't sell, like that wasn't the primary intention. And so that's okay. And like, I always make it a point to stay in integrity with that. So I guess the lesson is just like staying true to yourself on where you want to be on that scale. If that, hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I want to follow that up with, I think that's like really good advice, because it's really true. And also knowing that as an artist, as a human, you need like this financial sustainability. How have you balanced that integrity, which I think is so important, with like financial sustainability with your business? Like, what are the ways that you've maybe made different income streams happen or licensing? Like, tell me a little bit more about that so that you have that cushion to be really, you know, focused on your art's integrity.
Yeah. So taking commissions is part of that for sure. Like recently large scale murals have really helped with that. And that, you know, commissions are an interesting one because they're usually a response to the work that you're putting out there. And yet at the same time, they're probably, it's a little bit of what the client wants too. And so it's kind of a middle ground. It's not completely like your own do whatever you want in the studio thing.
Right.
So that's one way. And then the other way is honestly teaching and mentoring. I think I kind of knew that going into this, that I wanted this freedom. And so the teaching and mentoring really helps me with that. You know, in addition to giving me an outlet, that's also very true to me. I don't think I would even be completely satisfied if I didn't have that side to my business. It's also the area I probably respond a little bit more to what my audience wants in that department than I do in the art department.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Do you kind of lean more on the side of one-to-one mentoring, or do you also have courses? How does that all like play out for you?
For a long time, it was just courses. Like, it's pre-recorded. You purchase it, you can do it at your own pace. And that model worked really well for me. Recently, I've leaned more into the one-on-one mentoring. I've do one-on-one programs, like 3-month programs with just one person. Mm-hmm. And then right now I'm doing like group mentorship where there's some one-on-one mentoring and then they all get individual time within a group space. And I'm really, really, really enjoying that. I love the courses. I mean, the truth with the courses where I'm at right now is I created so many when I first started my business. Mm-hmm. I got a little burnt out because they are intense to create. And I'm also in a place where now I would probably be teaching not necessarily different things, but I'm just kind of ready for an upgrade. So I've put a lot of those courses to rest and I need to create new ones. But I'm not quite there yet. Yeah, so I think I oscillate back and forth.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's really wise of you to be doing the one-on-one anyway, as you kind of percolate, I guess, on the new courses, because that's going to give you all the information probably that you need new courses.
Totally. Yeah.
Has there been certain things that have come up a lot with your students that they've asked you about or that you've like found that you've focused on more? I know you talked about like consistency.
Yeah, consistency. Yeah, I notice with so many people these days with Instagram being such a thing, and I get it. I do. I understand it. But I think working with people has really showed me just how much stress there is over what your feed looks like. Mm-hmm. And I do understand it. But I see it holding so many people back because they can't have like exactly what they see being showcased online. And so then it's kind of paralyzing to them. Mm-hmm. I see that come up a lot. I see, you know, struggling with consistency to create, like showing up to the creative practice. That's a really big theme. And then a lot of worth stuff around charging and sending newsletters and like quote unquote marketing. I mean, that's a much larger topic, but I work a lot with people in that realm too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, the social media thing is a really interesting conversation because I teach a little bit about Instagram locally to a group of artists that are, you know, really need some help with it. And I've noticed that too, where it's such an amazing opportunity because, you know, like even 30 years ago to get in, quote unquote, as an artist, you'd have to like lug your work around and get through the gatekeepers and probably not because you're a woman and all these things. And we have like this open portal to the world with social media. So I try to remind people that it's an opportunity and not an obstacle. It is really interesting to see how much stress and how, you know, there needs to be different approaches to it. I think I love that Andy Pizza talks a lot about it being a way to connect and, you know, be creative with your career and your social media, as opposed to just being creative with your art and then letting everything else be paralyzing.
Yeah, totally.
So, it's an interesting conversation. But to pivot again, I'm wondering how things are going now. Like if people are listening to this later, we are right in the middle of a very strange time.
Yeah. If you're listening to this later, don't time travel backwards.
Yeah. No. Although it'll be really interesting to see what comes of all this because there's been so much happening. But we are in this time of COVID-19. Pandemic and everything basically being shut down and, you know, just so much. And so I'm wondering how that has impacted you as an artist, as a business person, like real talk, how are you doing?
Yeah. Well, from an art business perspective, I'm very lucky in that I can still go to my studio. I think if I didn't have that, I would be flipping out even more so. So I've actually been going to my studio a little bit more, I think mainly just because I'm looking to hold on to a semblance of a routine. Mm-hmm. And just like something to orient getting out of the house, you know, around.
Yeah.
So there's that. I will say at the studio, however, once I'm there, I've been taking a lot of downtime. Like sometimes I just give myself permission to go in there, eat my lunch, sit on my phone, doodle a little bit and then go home. So like I'm not like actually as productive in there than maybe I might be outside of this time period. And
which is totally fine.
Oh yeah, yeah, totally.
Just normalizing it.
Oh yeah, it's so normal. Yeah, if you're not creating at all, it's normal. If you're creating like you're on a stimulant, that's fine. Like, you know, whatever. It's
we totally all cope normal in different ways.
Yeah. One thing I will say that's just kind of like not necessarily good or bad, but just an interesting aside is because my process is really intuitive, and I do feel like when I'm in my creative space and in my studio, I'm tuning into something elsewhere. I mean, I think all of us are when we're in that like creative state, but because what's going on right now is so wacky in the collective and potentially wacky in whatever energetic realm exists on top of us or outside of us or whatever, weird stuff like has been coming through. Like I've been wanting to work with totally different materials and incorporate totally different elements. And not necessarily in like, oh, that's such a good thing, but more in a way that I'm kind of like borderline frustrated. So it's like kind of interesting. And then also I've just had to let go of the idea that I'm going to create any like quote unquote worthwhile work at this time. Like maybe my work really is just to go in there and process and like let it be what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been happening. As a business person, I do want to just put this out there. I know a lot of people are struggling and in all kinds of situations, and I'm not saying this to like invalidate that in the slightest, but more just to give hope if you are an artist. I've actually seen a lot of support come through, and I actually, my sales have been decent, if not slightly better, which has been really surprising to me, and I'm really grateful, and it's been really amazing. Of course, I have lots of fear about the future. You know, this is, I'm only looking on this at like on a 2-month scale so far. So this is not like an indicator for the long run. But in the immediate, I kind of want to put out there that like there is also a reality where people have their same jobs and they're just at home bored shopping online.
Yep. And so many people.
There's so many people doing that. And so if you are somebody who sells your work online, this can be an okay time for you. Like that potential exists as well.
Yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I did a whole podcast episode about that a couple weeks ago, because I was noticing this trend at that point. I think it's shifted a little bit, but a lot of artists were actually asking if it was quote unquote appropriate.
Yeah.
To even, I kinda went through that. Even share. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I went back to like what art means to me and like to other people, that it's literally us sending up pings from the depths, you know, like letting people know that hope is alive. And I've seen the same thing too. Like there's a lot of hardship and suffering, and it doesn't mean that that goes away, but there are also a lot of people who are supporting art, and that art is like keeping us all alive. And so I've seen the same thing where it's like you put your stuff out there and maybe people don't buy it and maybe people do. And it's not like we're forcing people to buy our work, but if it's out there and it sparks joy for someone, to give them that opportunity, you know, to take hold of that, like I think it's a powerful thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Agreed. Completely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure. So as we kind of come to the end of this and wrap up a little bit, there was another question that I wanted to circle back to, because I'm just personally very curious about it. Yeah. But I noticed before all of this started happening, you got to do a mural for Vans.
Yeah.
And I would love to know the story behind that, because I was a huge fan of that. And I'm super curious about it.
Yeah, I'd love to share about that. I also learned so many things in that process that I'm happy to share about how people get found and all that.
Yeah, give us all the tea.
So I got reached out to by the agency that like there's like a third party agency that coordinates all of their like art and installations and art shows related to Vans, all kinds of things. And they're called Creative Drinking Agency. And they reached out to me, sent me an email, had found me on Instagram. asked me if I was available for the project, and it was pretty much like instant. It also happened to fall on what was already the busiest week of my life, I would like to add.
Oh my goodness.
They're like, we need it done by this day, which was like next week.
Because of course.
Yeah. So note to people out there, brands work really fast most of the time. So be prepared for that. And but of course I wasn't going to say no. So, I mean, I did that on like no sleep with no design prepared, just like ran because of the way it came about.
Respect.
Yeah, thanks. But in that process, what was really cool was to get to talk to the people that hired me and asked all the questions about how they find artists and how they work with artists. And it was really inspiring to know that there are people who hold the keys to real opportunities that are looking for people exactly like you, and they're looking on Instagram. And so she told me she had actually found me like 6 months prior when she was doing research for another project, like some other thing. And, and then they end up just kind of keeping you on a list and circling back around to who's local, who's available, who's a good fit for the project. And so, you know, the things I learned that I was maybe doing right that I would pass along to others, you know, having a voice and a distinct style, like something to say, that's what they're looking for when they're looking to work with artists. They're not really looking for like a jack of all trades. Somebody like that might do better in like an internal creative department. But when they're looking to collaborate with an artist, they're looking for like somebody who's going to bring their vision to the table. Easy to work with, easy to contact, like have your location on your Instagram. Those were like my main takeaways, was like, oh, I'm doing something right by putting out this like consistent voice and showcasing who I am and making, and, and making myself available. You know, prior to that, I'll also add that it was my intention to do more murals. And so I sought out opportunities to build my mural portfolio. And I was really lucky to find people who supported that, who had spaces, and work my way up a little bit, like, you know, doing a couple free ones, to charging for supplies, to doing one for really inexpensive. If your desire is to do murals, you really do need to show that you can do them and like what they're going to look like. So I was really grateful that I had done all of that back work, which I think set me up to line up with that opportunity.
That's fantastic and very exciting, because, you know, when one of us gets to do something like that, it's like an opportunity not to be like, oh, she took the opportunity, but to be like, oh, those exist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
There's so much space.
Yeah. There's so much space. Yeah. Yeah, there's so much space. And your voice is really needed, and it's like being looked for. So I think as artists, it's your job to show like, hey, I'm here and this is what I can do, you know, and to develop your skills to get to that point as well.
Yeah. And it's really exciting. And were there anything that surprised you with that process, where you're like, oh, this is something that I could learn from this that maybe I wasn't doing right before, or something that I didn't know?
Let me think. There was lots of things I learned. I'm trying to think of something I didn't know. I think I learned a lot from an artistic standpoint, like just the process itself, on such a short timetable. There were things that I kind of knew, but they were out of my control, but now I like extra know them. like the strength, I do think with murals, the strength of, especially if you're on a short timeline, it's one thing if you have like a whole week to like play around in the space and like mess up and paint over it and whatever, but when you don't have time to do that, the strength of your final piece is really the strength of your original design. And I really didn't have time to do a design, and I kind of wish I would have. I already knew that, but now after the fact, I'm like, I think next time, even if I don't have the time, I need to invent more time to do that part.
Pull it out of the air.
Yeah. So that was one thing. From a composition standpoint, I find that it's the details of my work that really bring my work to life. So like those pulled rainbows, or like that checkers, or like the fades, and all of those details on a mural take tons of extra time. And So knowing the time constraint I had, I think I would have focused more on large shapes to take up more space and maybe done less details and just kind of let that be what it is, like knowing the limitations of the time. I'm still really happy with how it turned out, but those are, you're just always doing new things in the process like that, especially on a timeline. So I think those were my main
Yeah, of course. And I mean, the outcome was great. It looks
Yeah.
beautiful. Yeah. And also, I think it's really interesting to note too that I think also knowing your own creative, like artistic vocabulary probably helped a lot too, because especially if you have like no time, I'm sure that you just pulled from the immediacy of, the elements that you were already using in your paintings. So I'm sure that helped too. Did you free paint that mural or did you like do a transfer process?
I free painted it. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Thanks. Yeah, I actually, it's funny when I did, because I didn't have time to do a design, there was one piece I had recently done that I liked. And it was v it's a small it was a small piece. I had like two elements, like a pink looking mountain and like a rainbow half circle were like the main elements of it. And because it was what I was excited about at the time, I was just based the whole thing off of that. And that just gave me starting ground without having time to do the design.
I mean, it's
Thanks.
fantastic. Thank you for
Yeah,
sharing that whole
totally.
process. So, as we wrap up, I like to wrap up with just a fun little lightning round of like silly
Great.
questions because it's fun. So, if you could pick any color that you had to see when you woke up in the morning every day, what color would it be?
Have a cheat answer. I would love to see like shimmering, like holographic iridescent. So it's like white but reflected colors.
So
Kind
rainbow.
of, it's a version of a rainbow.
Love it. Are you a morning person or a night
Oh,
owl?
morning. Definitely morning.
Love it. If you could go anywhere in the world, germ-free right now, where would you go?
Kauai.
Love it. I've
Me
never
either.
been,
I
but it's on my list.
want to
Yes. And if you could eat one meal for the rest of your life,
my
what would it
God.
be?
It's a boring answer, but I'd probably just have to say like this like burger salad that I usually make, because it just has like all of the nutritional elements, so I could like live on it forever. I feel the best when I eat that, so I should probably pick that instead of like pancakes.
A very
Yeah,
practical answer.
it's a
Mine is
practical
always like breakfast food, so like pancakes, bacon.
Yeah.
All of that. And if you could give yourself from 5 years ago a piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, man, so many things come to mind. Something around like you're not abnormal, like you're stronger than you think and you're not abnormal. Like all the things that you're feeling that are making you feel like depressed and crazy and just like everything is too much. Like you, there's a strength in that, and like it's gonna be okay, you know? I guess that's not really advice. It's more like a pep talk, but
Hey, I mean, pep
yeah.
talks are great too. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me today, Devin. I really
Oh, me
enjoyed it.
too. Thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys can find Devin's work. Where can people find you?
I hang out on Instagram a lot, which is at Devin Walls. My last name is WALZ as in zebra art, and devinwalls.com.
Sounds good. Those will be included in the show notes so that we can find you. And everyone needs to check out Devin's podcast as
Yes.
well, Art and
Yes,
Magic.
Art and Magic is also my podcast. Hopefully, season two coming soon.
Heck yes. Here
Yeah,
for it. Thanks so much,
thanks, Molly.
Devin. All
Yay,
right.
I
Thank you so much for tuning in, friends. I seriously love and appreciate every single one of you and want to give you a huge hug from over here. I just want to give a special shout out to every single one of my patrons on patreon.com/thedarlingrevolution. You guys are the real deal, and you are the reason why this podcast can exist and continue. Thank you all so much for your monthly support. I really, really appreciate it. If you guys want to hang out with me on social media, you can find me on Instagram and Facebook at The Darling Revolution. And to find out and catch up about all the latest updates on events, new collections, and all the other rad goodness that's coming up soon, you can go ahead and sign up to my email newsletter by going to my website, and that's www.thedarlingrevolution.com. Thanks so much, friends. Till next time, rage on, darlings.